It's my pleasure to introduce Jennifer Hoyer. She holds her PhD from
University of Chicago. She works, she's an associate professor at the University of Massachusetts Amherst, and her first book, The Family and the Nation, Gender and Citizenship in Revolutionary France, was published by Cornell. And in the theme that we're having here of recent publications, she's asked me to show this really interesting, I've had a chance to look at it, recently edited a volume entitled, oops, it's on the inside. No, here it is. Ending War, Revisiting the Aftermath of the Napoleonic Wars, with Denise Davidson, and edited with Denise Davidson and Christine Haynes. Jennifer?
I want to call attention today to a tension between the belief in the power of spectacle to inspire audiences and the fear of misdirected emotion stirred up by such displays. And I think we see aspects of this tension in many different circumstances, and certainly throughout the French Revolution. But I also think those tensions took on new meaning in the late Revolution, as authorities became increasingly distrustful of both popular mobilization and sensationalist psychology, while still seeking popular legitimacy. And I think conscription, and specifically events around the institution of the Jordan Law in 1798 and 1799, provide us with an unusual and distinctive lens onto these dynamics. Authorities relied on the power of the state to enforce the new law, but still presented military participation as fundamentally voluntary. They wanted mass support for war, but not necessarily mass mobilization. To help legitimate conscription within these constraints, they experimented with both reprising older forms of spectacles and introducing certain new ones. There are a lot of dimensions we could talk about for this. One thing that intrigues me, for example, is the insistence on the performance of collective joy when soldiers departed from war. But in the interest of brevity, I actually want to reprise a case I presented on the FHS a few years ago of the assassination in April 1799 of plenipotentiary ministers at a peace conference, assassination of two and attempted murder of a third. The so-called Rastatt murders took place exactly as directorial officials were trying to institute a second draft associated with the new law on conscription. Festivals, plays, and tributes commemorating the martyrs used deeply theatrical aspects and sort of explicit forms of staging. But they were also divisive aspects. Legislators argued, for example, about whether to follow precedents for displaying martyrs' bodies. And here, recent revolutionary practices were increasingly at odds with concerns about the effects of displays on popular imagination. One deputy, Moreau de Lyon, for example, called for prominent display of the minister's corpses, while his fellow legislator Garat argued that in Greece and Rome, representatives might have had to display the bloody remains of assassinated ministers, but that with a sensitive population capable of reacting to oral descriptions, quote, we don't need these horrible spectacles that prolong suffering without adding to the depth and duration of indignation. That it would simply suffice to read a narrative of events at the same time without actually showing anything. The government decided not to show the bodies. Instead, the master of ceremonies, Chenier, called upon Dupree, the one diplomat who had survived, to show his torn and bloody clothing, emphasizing those who survived the attacks and kind of limiting the display also had some precedence. I'm thinking, for example, of the attempted assassination attempt on Robespierre on the end, on the his survival. But not all commentators were pleased with this compromise. The Commissaire du Pouvoir Executive in the Seine, for example, reported that while news of the attacks had touched some, it had, quote, failed to excite the sublime enthusiasm that could have electrified spirits. This was due to an insufficient display of the martyrs. It is on their bloody corpses that we should swear war and the death of this murderous court. It is on a public funeral place that we should have exposed the murders of liberty. Great spectacles speak to the soul, to the physical sensibility that causes durable and powerful impressions on the hearts. Perhaps instead of sterile regrets, this funeral altar would be surrounded by new soldiers and covered with civic offerings. Now, I'd like to suggest that the question of whether French audiences were in fact too sensitive to consider horrific images directly was not simply a debate about how to control reactions to political incident or how to inspire warriors, although I think it was deeply connected to this effort to inspire both conscripts themselves or would-be conscripts and their families. Nor was it a straightforward reaction to the bloody spectacle of the terror, although that recent history played a role. Instead, I think it may be part of a longer-term trend towards rethinking the political uses of emotion, particularly the displays of emotion. Turn us to a couple of other angles. When the Minister of the Interior decreed that all the cantons of the Republic should hold a funeral festival for the Rastatt martyrs, he proclaimed that each should set up two columns. One would be white, decorated with the attributes of courage and liberty. It would honor conscripts and volunteers by publicizing their names. The other, a black column covered with the emblems of cowardliness, would condemn those who refused to fight. Their names would remain in ignominy until they did their duty. In the surrounding legislative debate, one deputy, Andrew, opposed the measure, emphasizing that it would divide the French when national unity was critical. His colleague, Bellou, proclaimed optimistically that there would be few names in the list of those who avoided service. I think very optimistically. And falsely. I think he was aware it would be false. As far as I know, this was actually the first time the French government resorted to the systematic shaming of shirkers. Obviously, attempts to humiliate drafters or deserters before, but this sort of attempt of the nominative list of those who had refused to fight. And I think there may be an extension here between the practice of nominative lists from those eligible for conscription to public lists of those who served or failed to serve. Some of the dangers of these displays, of those honorable and those deemed dishonorable, paralleled those accompanying the exhibition of martyrs' bodies. Focusing on martyrs' wounds risked inspiring the wrong emotions, revulsion or despair, rather than outrage against a common enemy. Publicizing the names of those who escaped or sought to escape military service also risked provoking undesired emotion, sympathy, perhaps even admiration, rather than scorn. It also risked emphasizing the numbers of those who actually did avoid conscription, and thus the weakness of the state. Finally, as I'm trying to be as fast as I can here, I want to mention one other public punishment for cowardice that came up in this context. The possibility of humiliating draft dodgers by associating them with women. And you see that in some of the sort of associations of the symbols on those columns of listing cowards with various signs of spinning and weaving and sort of other associations with women. That directorial officials envisioned using similar displays to those imagined or instituted both pre-revolutionary and revolutionary. For example, one administrator from Lucelle also proposed that he who refuses to march should be exposed to booing and contempt. He should be displayed in public assemblies, dressed in the nightcap of the woman near whom he tried to hide, since he could not tear himself from the arms of voluptuous pleasure and spineless leisure. Now, these proposals don't actually seem to have led to dressing draft dodgers as women, at least not as a common practice. Here, I think a proposal by another official, a juge de paix in Tarn, that draft dodgers wear women's balconets, carry a distaff, and be marched around the town, flanked each by four women. Doesn't actually reflect on how the women might feel about that. But I think this suggests one reason. He knew this would likely draw crowds otherwise indifferent to Republican institutions, but eager to take place in mockery. But directorial officials were increasingly trying to control and not excite popular unruliness. And so I suspect that this may have been an interesting but a potentially difficult way of trying to shame cowards. But I also suspect there are further gender dimensions of this reluctance, and particularly this reluctance to display it. I'll be quite curious if anybody else has any thoughts on that. Overall, then, I'd suggest that spectacle was an integral part of the institution of the new law of conscription, at least or especially for home audiences, and that we see that in reprisals both of some older forms of performance and innovations like considering different ways to humiliate or call attention to cowards, and that you see both a continued belief in the power of display to provoke response and a growing fear that authorities could not use spectacle, or at least certain forms of spectacle, to elicit the responses they desired and thus ultimately to promote war and the interests of the state.